What did you think? Episode 9.
That was cool. That was really cool. I was like, did they turn the dragon pit into an auditorium for a little bit? Mm-hmm. No, surely this can't be the dragon pit, but it is the dragon pit. So what? Why is... Oh, okay. I see.
It all came together.
It did.
Oh my gosh.
The pageantry of it got him in the end. Because he could have done it somewhere else where Maylie's wood bursted out of the floor. Would have been less room for all the people, though. So I guess it's a balance of everything. What did you think?
Unbelievable, honestly. That end scene
Tell
was
me more.
Just, well, that scene was just, was I don't know. Good. I was, the expectations in my mind were pretty high.
What were you expecting?
Episode 9, right. You know? I mean, there's such a precedent.
Can you
for
fill
this
everybody
being...
in who don't know about the legend of the episode 9s from the olden days, from the original series?
It's just usually, and you can fill in the blanks, mm-hmm. the episode of the season where... everything really climaxes. It's usually the episode. I don't know how to better explain it.
I think that's it. It's a thing that they might have accidentally done. I don't think that that's a thing, but we've got some pretty monumental moments in the first couple seasons, and it just became something that people on the internet and eventually people like TV critics would start mm-hmm. to add it to the copy, and it became part of the actual lore from... I don't know what you'd call it, greater society, that we would come to expect something from episode 9, and that status was really cemented when the Red Wedding happened. And man, they didn't disappoint with this one. Obviously, we weren't seeing that coming, and apart from it being really awesome to just enjoy and to be the subject of most of the owns that everyone is sending to us right now, it was just a big surprise to book readers too. So that's a promise Completely. That we can expect moving mm-hmm. forward, I think, is that we're not going to just watch with popcorn at how do they do it? And this is so cool to see it on the screen. And this is a fun time for all of us because we get to share in this thing that we don't feel the mystery of because we know how things turn out, but then this happens and we get to have that too.
Mm-hmm. The blockbuster moments are a surprise.
I mean, unless we know they're coming.
Sure.
There's some that, like, we just saw that episode preview from next week. We need to talk about that, but maybe we can save it for our next episode this week on this episode.
So. But there's too much from episode 9 for us to start diving into 10. Yeah.
But, I mean, some stuff that we know about obviously is going to be adapted and has been. But there's been little changes on stuff, changes mm-hmm. that weren't in the fire and blood context of the unreliable narrator changes, just some actual big ones like this with Rhaenys. And what a powerful decision it was. And, geez, a lot of people died for it.
I feel like Rhaenys, and they were kind of talking about this in the after the episode, sort of. This is what I gathered from what they were saying. But she hasn't had the opportunity to really flex in the way that she should as a character. You know, she's this storied person who should have been queen. And Alicent gets under her, well, both of them kind of get under each other's skin when Rhaenys says to Alicent, You think you're making moves, but you're still playing at the hands of these men. And so then that leads Alicent to make a couple decisions. And so for Rhaenys to have said that to Alicent and then make this decision and this come out in this impactful way and then choose not to Dracarys the whole thing mm-hmm. and to spare them and to basically look them in the eye and say, this is war. It was absolutely nuts. And
sick.
I'm so glad that she... had that opportunity. I really hoped, and we had talked a lot before the season even started, that we would get some really powerful moment from these older characters like Corlys or Rhaenys, you know, these people who've seen some stuff. And we've caught a little bit of it. And they've had some pretty cool moments, I guess. Maybe one or two really stand out in my mind in this season so far. And so to be able to bring her...
into the action.
History. Yeah, all of her everything into the action. I felt like was such a powerful move, and I'm so glad they did it at the end of the episode.
That's kind of like another promise that, especially just look at Maylie's, her dragon. I mean, it's like a trick up the sleeve this far into the season. We've seen tons of dragon action, but we haven't seen a dragon in that shape at that age. Caraxes is cool and weird, but Maylie's is big and fucking strong.
And Maylie's like, is, in that moment...
That's a dragon you want on your
flexing,
side.
Exactly, yes, flexing. And we haven't seen any dragon...
But that's Rhaenys.
Yeah.
And that's what we've not expected, and that's what you're saying has been sort of hiding. And we've sort of almost Lady Leonard her with her big moments have been excellent points that she's made.
Right.
And her general vibe being unconcerned with the moment when a lot of people are caught up with the this and thou of it. She's just been unconcerned. So we like her because she seems actually chill. And then it turns out Rhaenys's dragon is a monster.
Mm-hmm.
It's a monster that it is a damn shame for those people on the dais that is not on their side.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap.
And she's in her armor staring
yes,
them down.
Holy crap. What a win for that generation of viewers watching House of the Dragon. You know, my mom's going to text me tomorrow about this.
Yeah. The old lady
the
got
Monday
it.
Morning text. So yeah. This is what I think about Viserys. And apparently Rhaenys now gonna go up. We need to do a power rankings list.
I know.
For these characters from week to week, because she's going to go up at the top of everyone's power rankings a bunch after time.
Completely. I mean, Alicent, I love how Rhaenys says, that whole conversation between Rhaenys and Alicent was a highlight in the episode for me.
It was good, yeah.
But when she was basically saying, you want my dragon on your side, and did Alicent explicitly say that? Something like that. I don't know. We just watched the episode 4 minutes ago. So, but basically, like, we need your manpower.
Yeah.
We know what you're capable of, mm-hmm. what your dragon can do. Mm-hmm. Rhaenyra is not going to make a move against us if you're on our side.
Also, it would just be awkward for Rhaenyra if we were allies.
Exactly.
That's also part of it. And that's really the energy that Otto is trying to capture between the two of them. And that Alicent, I guess, brought to the surface and made it visible to the audience by addressing the fact that they're split on the way they want to handle stuff. I think she probably expects that she might actually be thinking about Rhaenys from a family perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she might not even be thinking about the dragon yet.
She did. I know that.
Oh, she did? Yeah, she said the dragon for sure.
The dragon was brought up. I just can't remember who brought it
again,
up.
Again, Allison's tricking me. And she did it back and forth in this episode, too. It's just sometimes I think that she has that point of view where she would think about that. And then sometimes I think that she feels like the actual friendships, the bonds between them are more important than the potential power that they might get mm-hmm. from making the right choices in these situations.
Right.
She's put off the potential ascension pretty well by just not addressing it and not making it more awkward for Viserys. And every time we've seen her in conversations in the show where she doesn't know that there's a camera attached to the wall filming her, she seems like she actually is like, but Rhaenyra's the one that was picked. That's
right.
Been her energy the whole time.
Right.
There was a lot of that in this episode with her when it came to the way that she felt about they've all been thinking and positioning Aegon
mm-hmm.
to take over for Viserys the whole time. And it was another one of those moments where it doesn't seem like a put on.
No.
I don't think it's for the sake of us. I don't think that the extreme in which she's pretending like she heard exactly what she's saying she heard, and her father is the one that can decode it the most. He's like, oh, you heard him say that? There's no one in the world more that can decode what she's trying to say more, because that's been the same energy as excuses that she had growing up with him, right? So he sees through it, and she still stands defiantly by it. And I don't think necessarily, it seems in some moments that it's a harmless, this is just what I came up with and what I think I heard, and I'm sticking with it, and I'm just a housewife. And then it seems like she's putting that on as a little shield, a little shell over the feeling of, I know if I say this, I can do some damage with it. I can at least use this as a reason to bring up the succession at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not Otto has a plan or anyone does anything, this might lead to something.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I thought that that was a thing, and then she acted surprised in the small council. So I'm still back and forth and undecided on Alicent, back and forth and undecided exactly why she wanted Rhaenys on her side. And when you throw in the dynamic that's forming with Aegon and what kind of person that she might be suspicious that he could become now that he has unbridled power, we're getting a lot of Joffrey vibes from this situation. Kind of like Baelor, where the same momentum of the situation took over Joffrey. This is way more spread out. For example, the people that she wants to protect from being murdered aren't in the city right now, mm-hmm. seemingly, mm-hmm. or at least well on their way out. So he can't directly do something crazy like that. But after this Rhaenys thing, I mean, the whole formula of what happened in GOT is thrown out the window. This is another one. It's a big, you can't really look at how it went before and guess how things are going to go now, because we don't know how they're going to react at King's Landing based on this sort of, I mean, I was going to say this sort of aggressive move. What am I talking about?
It was extremely aggressive.
Just small folks that died and maybe some lesser lords that didn't have good seats.
Listen,
but it was a pretty big deal.
It was. Yeah. I mean, I think that it is what it is. Sacrifices need to be made.
Do you think about Alicent?
Well, I really liked how they shot her in that small council meeting. Because I felt like, as somebody who knows nothing, the camera was like tilted over her a little bit so that she looked almost like at an angle. And so it made her look little. You know, like it made her look young and it made her look like frazzled. And she did not look like she was trying to manipulate the situation, at least from the way that.
The energy, too.
Yeah, you know, I felt like the whole thing, so I agree with you. She seemed very...
But is she putting that all on?
I don't think so.
In like a crazy person way, where she even keeps it only secret to herself.
I don't think so, because, I mean, potentially. So Rhaenys makes that comment to her when she's like, you're wiser than I believed you to be, Alicent right. Hightower. So we're not going to dismiss Alicent. This whole time she's been...
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't dismiss her.
But at the same time, she has that conversation with her dad where she's like, he's like, our hearts are one or whatever. And she was like...
I thought our hearts were one.
Yeah, you've been moving me as a pawn across the board. I think she was genuinely shocked that they'd been making moves without her and having
exactly.
conversations without her. I think that was a genuine thing, because it seems to me like she wants Aegon to be king, and she... hasn't had a lot of time to think about what just happened, to be honest. It's been a few hours. So whatever way she felt like that was going to happen, I don't think she's necessarily had a chance to formulate that in her head, because number of days ago, they were just at that dinner toasting to each other.
And she got an idea, just like Rhaenys did, from the conversation for her, too.
Exactly.
Wait a second. This is going to go my way.
Exactly.
And I can make this go my way.
It feels like, from my perspective, a situation that kind of got a little bit ahead of her. Like, she just wasn't expecting it to work out her way, like you said. And this whole thing where the small council is just immediately making decisions. There's not even any sort of surprise or hesitation. I think that just caught her off guard so much. And with the move to get rid of Rhaenyra and Daemon, I just don't think that she... I don't think it was a put on that she was surprised that that would happen. I think she truly felt like they could maybe come to some accord. I mean, like I said, we don't know for sure how long ago that dinner was, but when she and Rhaenyra said goodbye to each other, it was as friends, and we were going to hang out when we get back.
And so she's showing her love by saying, don't execute them.
Well, that's what Otto is saying to her. And Otto's like, I can't remember exactly what he said. Once again, classic. Can't wait to watch this with subtitles.
You're saying that for your childhood friend?
Yeah, yeah. He's like, you're still putting on for this girl 40 years later or whatever.
Is this the best strategic move or the best strategic move for your once childhood friend?
Exactly. So, once again, Alicent is just towing the line between somebody that we really want to dislike. I feel like we also got an answer to if she killed that servant girl or not. Because she makes that comment to Otto and she says... Or she makes that comment to someone about nothing is worth killing.
Don't say Helena.
Right. LOL. She makes a comment to somebody about how she doesn't need to kill anybody, basically. Do you remember when that was? And so, to me, in my mind, that was the immediate, reluctance to murder is not a weakness, is what she says to her dad.
Mm-hmm.
So, in my mind, that...
He's like, we're on business mode. This is why people like to watch Succession, by the way. Right. This is basically what that episode felt like. From what I've seen from it, I saw this really cool sequence where people are waiting in a boardroom to make a decision. Or it was either the opposite of that. There might be both, where they're also trying to make a decision super fast before someone shows up. Like, everyone actually shows up on time this time. That whole kind of energy was what this was.
Yeah, I've never seen Succession, but I believe you.
You just saw it.
Yeah, okay.
Basically.
There you go. Anyway, felt like... an answer to that question. I was impressed with her in this episode. I loved watching
her crazy good
handle the way this all unfolded. I mean,
yeah,
she acted for her life in this episode, and it was incredible.
Yeah, I really liked the young Aegon too.
Me too.
Stepped it up for me.
Him, the shift in his whole energy throughout the whole episode.
Mm-hmm.
It was wild.
Mm-hmm. I guess we got to stop calling him young. He's just Aegon now. The king.
He's a king. As he was starting to lift his hands in the air, I mean, he's kind of not sure, not sure, not sure. He's got the crown on his head. He's still not sure, not sure, not sure. And then people start cheering his name, and he's like, hmm. Interesting. He turns around. He lifts his arms in the air. I was like, uh-huh. That was, Otto was just, he's bursting with glee.
I've been saying he looks like the lead singer of My Chemical Romance for a while now. And his all-black ensemble.
And his eyes. The metal. Bags under his eyes.
Oh, for sure. That's the main part. But after tonight's full ensemble.
Last episode, Aegon wasn't doing it for me. But this episode, I felt like the dynamic, the whole storyline of them trying to find him.
Yeah, that was weird.
I really liked it. I felt like too. The tension was high.
It was. I thought the idea of it was weird. And then when we came to him, and it turns out that he was actually, I mean, he was literally hiding in a crevice. I mean, so it was really weird.
He doesn't want to be king.
That's it. When we found out that he knew too, then I was like, oh, okay, this was all making more sense.
Right.
It wasn't just a crazy night out and he's decided this is when I'm going to run away.
I'd kind of hoped that it had been and that they would find him.
Yeah.
Surrounded.
I know, but that just would have been too set up for the story. It would have felt like. Unless it was already established that he's on a string of doing this. That would have actually been pretty cool. If he's constantly busting out. And it's like, not today of all days.
Like, what day is it? I don't know what day it is.
Right, exactly. The same.
Aemond is part energy. Of the whole situation. He's pissed. That God, was Aemond. Such a great drop in there about how much Aemond wanted to be the one.
Yeah.
To be the guy. Because we've been getting this energy from him that he...
is just kind of crazy.
Yeah. That he just is... wants something. Violence.
Yeah, exactly.
That he's choosing violence
he
all
just
the time.
Wants to be like an anime action character right. That's chaotic. That's, I don't know, neutral. I don't know. I don't want to say he's bad, you know?
He hasn't chaotic, done anything neutral, bad maybe. Yet, you know? So yeah, we can't say he's bad. He just has the look about
him. He likes it. He likes it too much.
But come to find out, he actually wants...
Yep.
Power. He's like, I got the best dragon in the land.
Yeah, that was
such, I loved that line. He's like, I know history. I've been paying attention. I actually want to be king. Dragon can take all of yours.
Who the seven kingdoms has studied history and philosophy as I. Something like that.
Hilarious.
See, that's so heavy-handed to make him that kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, for the sake of the time and the fact that he's... like internet famous there in King's Landing, and there's no one to really check all of them. They're all basically homeschooled kids.
And Daemon's not there.
This is what a homeschooled style of Aemon would turn into. No offense to anyone who's homeschooled.
Right. He's been fighting Kristen Cole. You know, it's not like he's got anybody to check him.
Sure. So that means he can actually fight, and he does have a badass scar on his face, but the whole Zorro thing is
exactly.
tough.
Exactly.
I mean, I think you get to choose your hairstyle, even though you need to put out a certain look. And so RIP to Alicent's wishes that her son showed up to his coronation like that today. But Aemond looked the part, and that's what he chooses. And I was thinking about that when Aegon was in the carriage. I was like, this is how he wants to look.
Mm-hmm.
See, the other Aegon had the long hair look, and people liked that too. They were like, hmm. So this one's different. And it was a little shocking. So it's like, now you fancy yourself a bit of MCR/Devon Sawa. Got it. But Aemond wants to be full, like I said,
pirate.
Character, video game character.
Mm-hmm.
He's twisted. He's like, he's the guy who joins your party like three quarters of the way through the game. And he's pretty tough, but he can't beat your main guy. So he'll join the group, but I don't even want to be friends with you guys.
Uh-huh.
He just kind of hangs on the edges, has really snide stuff to say.
Right.
So I like him. And I don't know, I think it made a lot of people go, why can't he be king in this episode when he brought it up? I'm just one person away, as he said.
Completely. Part of me was, for a moment there, wondering if he was going to get rid of Aegon for a second, you know?
There in front of the Sept?
Yeah, potentially. I loved that moment between brothers, that pure moment between brothers when Aegon's like, I will just leave. Let me go, and I'm going to get on a ship, and I'm going to leave, and you can be king. I feel like we haven't really been able to see much of their relationship outside of a couple episodes ago with the Pink Dread, really. Or, you know, with Helaena kind of back and forth that moment at the funeral. So I liked that. And I'm looking forward to seeing how Aemond continues to, if we ever even get to see in the season, probably not. But Aemond's treatment or relationship with Aegon as Aegon starts to sink into the role of king, if he ever even really is going to have the opportunity to do so.
He's going to have some kind of cartoonish respect for him because he's the king.
He's the new Otto. He's like, today of all days, Jesus, your grace.
No, can you imagine if that they mix that in with his gruff, with his tough, I don't say gruff, his toughness.
You know what I loved so much in the after the episode? They were like, the Hightower's love pageantry or whatever.
They love an event.
They love an event. I was like... It made me LOL because it's a whole season we've just been making fun of Otto for all of his trappings of power. And then
you say Otto was rolling a blunt. It's so, that's what people are doing with his letter writing.
Right.
Because he licks the paper. All. God, it's still good.
It's so funny. We had a lot of great Otto looks in this episode.
They just keep stacking up.
Oh, man, it's too good.
Man, it's just his quickness to jump to violent power, though. It's just... Maybe we should look to Otto if we want answers for Allison, because Allison's also got a lot of positive traits, too.
Otto's been looking for violence since episode one.
Yeah, but not against, like, Viserys, for example.
No, but he's had that group of whisperers that he's been tapping into with the whole Rhaenyra thing. That's what I felt like they were alluding to when Larys told Allison in that scene that we're going to have to talk about. Yeah. Larys told Allison that Otto's been using this group forever. And in my mind, I felt like Allison, it clicked for her of the whole Rhaenyra, at least it did in my mind.
How could it take this long, though? I get it, but we're talking about mysteries from years ago.
I know, but I think it's one of those things where when you see it all laid out as one, like you understand it's going on and you know that something's happening, but when it's
now
all...
it's even more simpler.
Yeah, when it's all laid out on the table...
You're like, oh, it's not that complicated.
Right.
You've just been doing this in the next room. And then you talk to me right after you've been doing it for years.
Exactly. And so then she
just told me about it.
Well, and then after, I feel like having that conversation with Rhaenys only added to her whole kind of realization or kind of wake up moment. But at this point, it's much too late. It's way too late to have any sort of aha moment at all. And I don't think that she would necessarily change the trajectory of her actions. But I do think that... her desire to take some of her own power back.
Well, she did that. I love that. The shot going back to Otto in his room after she left, after she spoke to him and sort of laid down the glove after she spoke with Rhaenys with this renewed energy. And he said, as you wish.
Yeah.
And there he goes, falling right back into his role as the best second in command the realm has.
I hope that he was sincere, you know?
I think that he was, and I think it was sort of a deeper look into his character that you're kind of, it's sort of the same energy of hoping for more interactions with the brothers, where it trust that the audience has at least emotion when they see something, and we can take away from it what we want, the depth of how much of his pain that we want to explore, the existential worry or the feelings that he might have about how he's lived his life. But in that moment and the way that he clicks so quickly back into servitude, I think that's what I took away from it.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him going back into that place.
Someone's got to be good at being number two.
He raised up his daughter to be effective. Sorry, she won. Sorry,
exactly.
she beat you at your own game.
Well, and I feel like as a father, that's probably exciting, especially when your desires are aligned.
I know, but that's the thing about A Song of Ice and Fire. This world is so hectic and there's so much actual danger and you can hurt your leg and you might have to get it cut off from the knee down. And people make decisions. It's like Otto wanting power over his daughter was something that I can't remember all the different dynamics between families, but I'm sure that we've come across it in some tale while traveling through Westeros, some house where this was not an uncommon thing to do.
Right.
So he's not that vicious. So they don't have teeth that are that vicious. And Rhaenyra is also really nice too. And we've seen how much Daemon has softened up so much over the season. There's kids involved and they're not fully grown. The dragons are involved and some of them are not fully grown. And then, you know, the end of the episode, tap your watch, episode 9's creeping. It's going toward the end of the episode. What's the deal? And then boom, there's some actual Targaryen murderous viciousness, nuclear bomb, explosive potential energy injecting itself in the story. And then from what it seems like the next episode's going to be is the more telephone game with the news. I'm assuming everyone's going to hear about Viserys and then rattling of sabers, mm-hmm. a call to arms, and there'll be little time for ravens to be sent. Mm-hmm. So it's just going to be guessing what mm-hmm. everyone's decided. And based on quick moves, no one's going to know the subtleties of each other's emotions and the moments that they did.
And neither will we. Decisions. Which I think was really fun, is that as all of these things are unfolding, as the viewer, I'm just thinking, is someone going to stop this? What's happening? Is any, you know, everything was just kind of spiraling. And then we get that amazing Rhaenys moment. So I assume the next episode is going to be a similar thing of the quick moves with Daemon and Rhaenyra on their side to try to make something happen while we have no idea what's happening over in King's Landing. Potentially, I'm guessing. I think that would be really cool to have those two, the two scenarios separate now that they are I think that's clearly how separate. Doing it. That's what it seems like from the trailer.
Episode's called The Black Queen. Yeah.
This is so exciting.
I know.
This is so exciting.
We knew that the falling action from Viserys passing was going to be exciting, but I think maybe we expected it to be. I think we talked about potentially in episode 9 Viserys and then falling action in episode 10. Mm-hmm. But instead of putting it all in one episode, which would basically limit it to just talking head conversations, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the ones that happened in this episode would have been necessary right. in that one episode. So they split it into two, and they gave us a green one and a black one.
And they gave us
one is
the,
solo.
Right. They gave us the space and the stress and the they gave us everything.
We'll pick our own side based on what episode.
That's so fun.
Like how we watch it.
That's so fun that they did that. I'm so glad.
Everyone's
going to
pick
Rhaenys'
side. Everyone's going to pick her side. Yeah, she's the only one that hasn't stepped on anyone, and she's suffered a lot, and she was passed over. And Allison said, "You should be queen."
Right. She was just saying that because she was trying to get some currency with her.
What if Rhaenys showed up and was like, "I know that you just said that the king said all that, but you're alive and you're the queen regent, and you said I should be queen."
Well, I was wondering if she was maybe going to yell something in the audience, in the crowd. Because it kept panning to her. I was like, I wonder if she's going to like rile up the crowd for Rhaenyra or something.
Whoa.
But what she did was much, much cooler. Can you imagine if she had burned all those people to a crisp? Then what? You know?
As far as the show is concerned?
Yeah. That would have been nuts.
Maybe we would have been fighting Rhaenys, but we probably would have just made an alliance with her.
Yeah, exactly. And it would have been all over. This whole thing, no disrespect. Listen, I don't want to give Kristen Cole any credit whatsoever.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. But at least when somebody says something he doesn't like, it's over. You know? He dealt with that pretty
Do you want me to kill him?
Quickly.
We thought that was cute at first.
Right, exactly. Literally, we were just watching earlier today. We were watching some clips from we were like already nostalgic for the beginning
what
of
was
the
it
season.
Called again? Tell everyone what that was.
It was some YouTube video. I'm sure there's a lot of them about just the House of the Dragon being a comedy show
for six
seven
minutes
or whatever, you know, something like that. And one of them was that moment where Kristen says, "Do you want me to kill him?" And Rhaenyra kind of giggles. And we thought that was such a flirty, fun moment. But then we get the small council today. Are you serious? I mean, of course, but...
The way I saw it being depicted was they'd be in some room, some tight little room, scurried away, being like, "Ooh," you see some impressionist painting of it. "What are we going to do?" And then Beesbury speaks up, and then Crostini lops his head off just immediately. Mm-hmm. And that, it has the same energy as Rhaenys coming out of the floor. Just kind of, here it is. We're not, no bullshit moving forward. This is our plan. This is what we're doing. If you're with us, you're with us. If you're not against us, this is how quick we swing our sword. The exact same energy as what happened last week.
Exactly.
With Vaemond. Mm-hmm. What did you think about this version of it?
It was nuts.
Yeah.
Him slamming his head into his little ball thing.
The ball got a lot of play in this episode.
It really did.
I think this might be the last ride for the ball.
I think they're selling them. Did I see that somewhere correctly? So they're really trying to play him up. Like,
is
these things are cool
for
and
ball
important.
Merch?
No, but wouldn't that be funny?
This has all been a big ploy to sell marbles.
Right. They're like, marbles, really? We can sell this for a lot of money.
Upsell on it's insane. They probably can get a marble for a nickel and they can sell it for $65.
Exactly.
Jesus.
I'm pretty sure they sell the whole little set so you can put your place in for the small council.
That's cool. Every time I play Halo, I will sit down and
put my
marble in. Signing into work, everybody.
I thought that the way that this played out in the episode just matched the level of intensity and the level of hatred we have for Kristen Cole. I mean, the fact that he
killed Beesbury.
And he did it with his hands.
And he fucking put his face on the marble.
Exactly.
That's even worse than the table.
Exactly.
Or the base itself. It was just a lot of texture. He like meat tenderized his head.
And then they left him there. They're like, no, leave him. We are not leaving this room.
And they locked Rainey's in her room.
I know.
Talk about, is this what you call peace?
Well, they're ready. I mean, that was the thing. It's like they were all ready to go.
Allison is even better than Cersei was at doing that. Because Cersei, she was just like always a second wave going, you know what? All right, I'm going to kill you.
Right.
I'm going to order you to die. I'm going to send you down to Varys's torture chamber. Or not Varys, to QQQ's torture chamber. That's Qyburn's candy corner, in case anybody was wondering. Yeah, no, she was just like, this is a peaceful thing. It's so much more dangerous when she seems like, I'm just a housewife who's flustered all the time.
She did get angry, though.
When
she's like, I'm going to send you to the wall if you guys don't stop talking at some point during that meeting. It was like the only glimmer of intensity that I felt like we got, at least.
That rules.
In that meeting there. It was such a good balance in my mind because she's playing between the two so well.
What a crazy first season. I mean, we had that entire Viserys masterclass of how to make us like something more than we should last week and now this.
You know what I love too?
So weird.
Is the opening scene of the episode when they're just kind of flashing through these different scenes that we've spent, these different places that we've spent so much time with Viserys and squad the last X amount of episodes, last 8 episodes. It was kind of like a flashback here in episode 9 of remember this and remember this and remember this. And now here we go into the drama of it all that Viserys is gone. It was early in the morning, you know, everything was quiet and we just got these moments with these places.
I loved it. I felt so appreciative of what we were seeing in many stretches throughout this episode, and that was at the start of it, so that began it, but that energy was carried throughout this episode and has really been present throughout this season. It was really turned up to a high level in this episode, I think mainly technically because they spent so much time at King's Landing, so they had to make it feel like there was some space there, and they weren't just filming people in close sets that were made to look like rooms that had light shining through a strategically placed window and glittering off a strategically placed amulet on the wall.
They've done well this whole season with that.
When I see that, and when I see all of the small folk walking for a long enough amount of time to make it feel like you're walking to go stand in line there too.
It's more than one street.
It feels like when you're reading a book and you walk into someone's office, maybe they're talking to a detective, and the room is described, and eventually it fills in for you the way that the author chooses certain words that are direct descriptors and certain words that are just meant to make you think a whole cloud of things that you shove together as one little combobulated color slash word. And it's impossible to do that with film. Film is so unforgiving because it's audio and video at once. And think about how much money they have to pay to get those dragons just to stand up even one time. Think about the stuff they did on such a huge show like Game of Thrones just to get around putting in dire wolves.
Mm-hmm.
So putting stuff on camera is really, really unforgiving and really hard. And so how do we convey the magic of books that people love on screen? That's something that people making movies have struggled with since the beginning, and there's been a lot of really creative solutions, and some of them have been inspired by the text themselves. And I think in this case, it's been inspired by folks working on it that love books, and that it seems like they've really appreciated the function of trying to make something that exists really well in one format recreate some of the reason why that's good in another. And there's just been so much attention to showing the environment in a sleepy, almost God view sort of way.
Yeah.
I tried to talk to you about it a few weeks ago where I was like, I feel like there's some overarching presence that is the knowing overseer of this whole thing. And that's us. And I think that that's why you love Prisoner of Azkaban so much, that Harry Potter film, because there's so much time spent to just let the world around it breathe.
Completely.
You can literally almost feel the Whomping Willow breathe, and it makes you feel like you're there. It makes you feel like it's a real place. I think that you see that, and then when it cuts away from that what felt like a sequence from a Final Fantasy game at the very beginning of this episode, where people are just walking from place to place and there's very trouncy classical music playing. When it cuts away from one environment, I think that your brain does what a book does, where it doesn't give you all the information, it gives you enough, and then you fill in the rest. I think that that's what it does when you don't just do a single establishing shot with a little placard that says Winterfell, but when you show that and then you keep giving us more, and it's like, oh, come on, when are you going to stop? But that's like how it feels to walk. If you want to walk across town to get to that place, you have to actually get there. And so if I have to physically go to that location to get what I want in film, don't I need to still put out the blocks to walk to get to the feeling that I want to be represented? And I think that they've really done that with Hot D. They've mm-hmm. really given us tastes of the environment. I wish that there was more. I can only imagine how valuable screen time is on this show with all the amount of stuff that they have to jam in there. But, you know, we're getting a lot of that backstory between in relationships between these characters sacrificed because of how it was written, but also because there needs to be a balance of everything. I mean, you could almost ask for 24 episodes if you really wanted to make it feel like a book. You could really make it feel like you were living there. But I don't know, we're just not there yet. But I think that this show is like the furthest along that we have of people standing in rooms talking, but also trying to make the world feel vibrant and alive, like you're actually there. We only got one establishing shot of the building in Mad Men.
Well, and I just think compared especially to the last season of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
You know, time. So I think it just...
Like, how do you make Dragonstone feel small?
Right.
On the walkway outside.
I know. I feel like that has, as we eventually soon in the next, you know, week or so, sit down and look back on the entire season, I think that if I can give an own to something of the whole season, it's going to be that space that they've granted us and the ability to live in the world in a way that I don't think any of us were expecting to. We got some of those shots in the trailers and in the early first episode of King's Landing with all the Targaryen heraldry. And so I'm just glad that played out. We're never going to be satisfied though until we get like a 3D walkthrough that we can,
but it's
you know.
It's really good though. Like I said, just the more time. I talked about it before weeks ago where we were just walking to the throne room with folks. It seems like the people making this they got a little idea. They're like, wait a second, we can make this more. And by just showing the real stuff, they're making something that's different, which mm-hmm. is so wild to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's so wild.
It's great. That's all it is. And it continues to stand out week after week after week after week. It just...
We would get like 2 seconds of it in Game of Thrones. It'd be like a bush, and then it would move over to Arya and the Hound doing something funny. Mm-hmm. We'd get some sleepy things, but they were not... It wasn't enough to feel comforted by them. It was enough to think, oh, this is important.
Right.
There might be a
clue
in this.
Or this is where I am. Yeah, completely.
I like that there's more.
Completely. This, it's like you said, it's from a book lover's perspective. And you think about like George R. R. Martin's brain and him being able to dig in on something in the way that he would want to. I can see how. Of course, we're able to translate things a little bit more world-buildy. It's because he's been able to make the show that he should have always been able to make.
Yeah, I know, but I can't imagine that he alone has the answer to how to make 10 weeks go down so...
Of course not.
Interestingly.
But he's got a good team around him and the flexibility
sure.
and the creativity and the... I think that our fear with any of these successor shows was cash cow, baby.
But they wouldn't actually be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because some cursed child energy, you know?
It's easy to shoot people standing in a room at that scale. It's not easy. It's really hard to do. But we're talking about they can throw money at a problem, and it's so much easier to – you have like 12 rooms that you can turn into rooms, and you can film so many of them at one time.
And I can
and
pump out a
travel
script.
Everyone's travel is a certain amount at one time.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the beginning. That's the first problem.
But no, instead we got careful, quiet, complex, and – heartstring jerking drama.
Yeah, but like I was saying earlier, different kinds of episodes, mm-hmm. different kinds, and different kinds of actors, different approaches to it, but also always having a almost British self-awareness and sort of self-deprecation to its seriousness a lot with how Patty acted or how this new Aemon character acts. But then, you know, really earnest and sincere depictions of high fantasy. Mm-hmm. I just think that some of these sequences in this episode of the sneaking and the walking around King's Landing, the alleyways, the Street of Silk, or streets, there was many.
The conversation with Missaria and Otto, sitting at that little those little tables in the middle of everything going on.
For me, it was mostly what I love was just the transition-y kind of stuff. There was so much wordless stuff. So much... what did I say it was like when we were watching it? It was just... it was quiet. There wasn't a lot of dialogue. It was like Barry Lyndon.
I don't remember. I don't remember you saying that, but you may have been thinking it.
It was like Barry Lyndon, where it was just... The magic that we're giving you is the fact that you're just seeing something captured this good and this truly and this purely. And yes, this is a real drama, a real situation that these people are dealing with, but this is all just so masterfully presented to you that its impact is made in its simplicity of how much it's encompassing all of that. And then you add in a little bit of just the right flavor of medieval music. I swear it felt like it was like Final Fantasy IX. It was just, and that's what we want when we think about this aesthetic. We all pull certain ideas. And for my age group, a lot of it was spent trying to beat evil beasts and hearing the same stuff over and over. And it was uplifted by the right energy, the right like awareness of how deep the plot is. And how serious it is, and how serious you want to take it, or for me, so serious that I'm like, play this song at my funeral. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? They do that with this show too, and it just keeps getting better with these episodes.
I agree.
And so I just love them ferreting around the castle with a little do 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 do. It's just give me more of that.
I don't have anything else to add other than I completely agree with you. I mean,
what do you think about
Eric's? We've talked about this. Well, let me just say, we talked about this so many times before, but the thing that I like that they've done in this season is that we've just spent time. We've had these bottle episodes, it seems like, almost the whole time, where we've been in one or two places. We've been on Driftmark. We've been in King's Landing. We've pretty much only been, I guess we'd never really have been in Dragonstone for long enough for a whole episode.
No, definitely not.
But,
no.
You know,
just
I still.
Those two are the only bodily ones.
But still.
And The Hunt.
And The Hunt.
Kingswood.
So cool. I love that. We get that very intimate time spent with these places instead of jumping around. So I really liked that.
I think that that'll be another mark of this season, and that we're going to see so much more of the world once we start traveling via Dragonmoor. Gosh,
I know. That's one thing that surprised me is how little the dragons have played a role in House of the Dragon.
They're patient with this thing.
I know. They've just been like a normal backdroppy kind of thing, which I know we had talked about hoping that it would be that seamless, but when we saw that Rhaenys moment, I mean, we've had some pretty cool dragon scenes for sure. I'm not going to step back and say that we haven't, because you look at Aemon and you look at Daemon and
old GOT ones too.
Yeah, I mean, there was lots of really great, there's been lots of great dragon back moments, but just the I mean, we're getting to the fighting, so of course it makes sense that now we get the angry dragon, but I thought it was just really cool. I felt like, again, not to talk about what we originally had believed when we learned about House of the Dragon, but it's like, okay, now this is just a good opportunity for them to breathe dragon fire everywhere. And so that's what the show is going to be, and it's going to be one dragon battle after the next. But none of that. Yeah. Literally none of that.
Actually, well, they did add an extra dragon in this one, though.
Right.
The Melee's thing.
Listen. We can forgive them for that. You know, there. We can forgive them for that.
We loved them for it. We're not going to forgive them for it.
Exactly.
I didn't even know I needed that. Thank you.
It was a slow burn. You asked me what I thought about the twins.
Yeah, Eric and Eric. I loved it. I just love this new characters in the show, and they're good actors, and they're just all over the place.
You just like their long hair.
They had their hair put up. It did seem like very normal dudes that stumbled on set.
Yeah,
which
they
I also loved. All these other actors have a very specific look. Like, they put those people on the spaceship whenever the rocks come toward Earth. Mm-hmm. Save those people, but don't save the Erics.
They were just walking around, shuffling through.
Yeah, I mean, they were doing their job. And so was Christine, and so was Aemon. But I just love the dynamic between them, and I love the way that they put them in there to make us care about them in a certain way. And I loved the breakout of Rhaenys, mm-hmm. and them using,
mm-hmm.
it's just give me, pour it on me. All right.
give me more Eric.
Yeah. Give me more Eric. Which one though?
Exactly.
You know, you don't even know
exactly.
Which one I like.
Exactly.
That's the problem. That's the problem with this whole podcast. You don't know which Eric I like.
I felt like it was cool. I mean, you've been excited for this since you saw them, saw Eric in the last episode.
Let me tell you why I'm excited. Okay. I'm excited because they're a pair of minor book characters that they're using in a really cool way. And as a person just like you, it's become almost a spectator sport of loving these really lovingly prepared books and then seeing however it's chosen to be translated. I was hurt so much as a youth that it's become my life's mission to find good ones and to enjoy them. And that's why this podcast was born.
If they include the Erics and they're really paying attention.
Not only that, you have to.
You have to, but...
But to do it with such swag, to borrow a word from you, is just chef's kiss.
Especially,
it's just all these promises of paying attention. Don't let me down. I've been let down before. I'm like, wow, this is they're killing it with this show. If they make a whole catalog of episodes that you can flip through of House of the Dragon and they put it on HBO's app and people are going to be able to access that, just like Game of Thrones, there's going to be a hot debate between which one people like more.
Before House of the Dragon started, and I did not believe you for a second. And now I'm starting to. Do you not just like the Erics more because they are in contrast to Christine Cole and his actions? Kristen is way too polished. When Allison said to him, "As you in however you love me as your queen," or whatever, I was just like,
"Between us, is,
gross."
Kristen's like, "The one time I was late, this reminds me of that."
Exactly, the one time. But he's so polished, you know. His hair is really shiny, and he's like all put together. And then the Erics are out there. Just they seem like they're roughing it, but then they come to battle and the blows, and Kristen beats him.
Yeah, you need another girl on this podcast so you guys can really yeah, talk about it
about hair.
Yeah, I'm like thinking about Kristen. I'm like, he's polished, huh?
He is. All he right. definitely is.
Right on.
In a way that I can't describe. Everybody listening,
I completely agree. I thought the same thing, but the way that I saw it was that he was sticking out cartoonishly on purpose.
No, completely.
Just completely cartoonishly sticking out, and that his unaging is also on purpose.
I don't know what narrative there. He's using.
It's not real, Hannah. It's just they did this all within 2 weeks.
Come on. This is fun. It's more fun when it is.
The shit that they sell in a shy, you have no idea.
Right.
That's actually why Melisandre, it's not her necklace. That was a joke. She held it to the end. She's like, just in case someone's watching me, I don't want them to know it's really good lotion.
I want it to go flying off the shelves. He definitely still.
I don't want to not be able to buy it on Amazon anymore.
Exactly. Him knighting Aegon as well. Not knighting him, LOL. Placing the crown on his head. And he's like, everybody must know that he's the one true heir. And the whole crowd started kind of grumbling a little bit. Did you notice that? I was like, Kristen, come on.
You put it on too much.
Bud. Yeah, you're trying to be the one. You're getting a little too ahead of yourself here. Really, I'm just sitting here dancing around the Allison Laris conversation. As I'm scrolling through my notes, I'm like, what else can we talk about that's not that? It just escalated and escalated, and I yelled out loud. I was
RIP
like,
to everyone that thought Laris had a little bit more going on there, I guess. Right?
It's all it takes. When when she was like putting her feet up on the thing, first I was like, okay, she's getting really cozy. They're like pals. She's getting really cozy.
I knew immediately. Keep going.
I was just, I'm so naive, you know? I'm like very hopeful that things are nice and pure.
The queen's feet.
I mean, she just took her shoes off, you know, whatever.
Yeah, not the queen's feet.
I know. And then she takes her stockings off. I literally can't.
Dude.
Then he puts as soon as his hand moved, I was like, no, absolutely not. How long has this been going on for?
That's
Allison
what I'm
is
wondering.
Literally selling feet pics for information, like shamelessly. I know she was not having a good time, but
Dude.
It was nuts.
Dude. It's like a natural filter that the universe puts in place. And he failed that filter. and she knows it, but she still needs that information.
Well, I'm wondering, like, how did it start? How did it come up? You know?
I mean, I can think of about 50 people I can imagine doing exactly the same thing.
I know, but it's she's like, wait, like, it's like really...
they see themselves as Alaris, and then wait a second.
If that's all she has to do to get the info, helpful and useful info that she needs, listen. I guess it's not that much, but it's just hilarious.
What do you think about that? As a woman, as a foot haver, I could ask myself this question.
Right.
What do I think?
No free feet pics, you know? I mean, she's not doling them out for free.
The queen can't show her feet for free.
No, that's absolutely not.
Yeah.
No one should. Know your worth, you know what I mean?
Definitely. This one time I walked in the room and up on Hannah's screen was how to sell your feet pics in a non-weird way.
That was 2 minutes ago when I was like, should I put this on Instagram? I think that it is, again, this whole episode. What? What? I'm trying to make a good point.
We're having a serious conversation. You're like, I think that.
This is a very serious podcast.
About Laris's jacking
Listen,
off.
Listen, it was gross.
To Allison's little feet.
When he slid his hand in there, it was literally gross.
Little feet.
It made me feel gross. But I feel like in the context of that, I feel like the conversation that Allison and Rainey's had is such a good framework for every decision both of them make in this episode. And it's just another point of Allison doing things for men. Just playing in this game for men. And I'm sure that Laris has proven himself to be... I mean, he got rid of the Strongs. So yeah. That Otto could be, and who
he
knows?
He did burn his family so he could ultimately jack off to the queen's feet
exactly.
As she faces away from him.
I mean, he only has one, so he's like...
Only has one what?
Foot.
Well, so?
So maybe he's like extra, you know, fetishy about other people's like 2 feet.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
Just because he's fetishy, maybe he could do it with someone that wants to have sex with him.
Sure, but that's not the thing. It's the queen.
That's
you know
the
what
thing.
Mean?
I can't blame him for that. I mean, that's it. It's, if someone who wants to do that, there's no better feet for it.
Exactly.
That's and the top feet.
There was that moment where some building was burning and we were like, wait a second.
Yeah, when they were the escape.
Right. It, that's
how I saw it too.
Laris,
the burning
right?
being sort of
Something.
Like a little wink yeah. to the style of, in which Laris is carrying out these attempts.
Sure, and we can unpack that in the midweek episode when we watch it with subtitles, you know what I mean? But anyway, I just felt like having that moment in the midst of this whole thing about Allison kind of thinking about how she's just been, and we've been talking about it for weeks, how she's just kind of been part of this whole, she's like, I don't even know what decisions are my own because you pushed me into them, Dad, you know? And so there's that. And then the other thought I have is if she can use her to get what she wants, no harm, no foul. You know, if he's going to be enough of a creep where he'll like, I'll literally do anything just so I can get off for 3 minutes awkwardly while you look the other way. Like if that does it for you and I get all this information, okay.
If that's all the trade is, then.
Exactly.
After all this time, you'd expect him to be more heavily wrapped up in the whole business of it. It seemed like maybe that's what he wanted, but it doesn't seem like he's made any ground in really anything other than being able to jack off to her feet.
It makes him so much less. Look, Littlefinger had the Achilles heel of Sansa, you know, and Laris's Achilles heel is this.
It's just the best thing he can get. He's not cool with the long game. He
it
just,
makes him less cool.
There's so many reasons why.
Yeah, because all of a sudden he's not this player that's, he's just, you would hope that he's this mysterious guy who's willing to actually do really bad things because he's trying to
get something.
Get some. But the thing that he wants is like, if that's all you, if that's your ambition, then.
Cover your ears, Laris.
Yeah, I know that time before the internet was rough, I'm sure. But anyway, I felt like that was a nuts scene.
He's the Lord of Harrenhal. He can get stuff if he wants it. You think this also, she feels bad for him about his foot?
No.
You don't think?
Why? He's doing just fine for him. Like, he's doing great for himself.
He's rich, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing great for himself.
But he also can't, you know, run.
Who wants to run? You know what I mean?
True.
What a wild... I just was not expecting it.
So humanizing of the whole situation.
It really was. It really was.
Just like
for both of them.
A little joke hurled toward all of us that were like, who's this guy? He's got a big game going on.
Exactly, exactly. But his big game is...
I mean, listen, he could still have a big game going on just because he's doing this. The thing is, his game could be so big that he doesn't care that this is gross. He's just like, I can do this.
Maybe. We'll see.
We'll see. I just saved it. Thank God at the end.
We're not going to completely dismiss him.
All right. We're going to get this episode out for all of you. I'm going to give my own to the empty places in this episode. For God's sakes, I'm typical, but I'm going to do it.
And it was that good, though.
I also liked Helena's Black Widow little stitching. That was nice. I liked how much everybody complained in this episode. And I loved Rhaenys.
Isn't it wild that Rhaenyra and Daemon weren't even in this episode 1 second?
Whoa.
I missed them.
A whole week?
My own is going to go to Rhaenys, obviously. I mean, shout out there. But I also wanted to give my own to that line that Helena said. I'm probably going to butcher it, but she says, "It is our fate, I think, to crave what is given to another. If one possesses a thing, the other will take it away." That little line, just in the context of everything, and just that so much is just coming down to the jealousy between Alicent and Rhaenyra. And then now here we are, and for her to kind of be spewing that, I thought that was really a great use of Helena's powers.
Well, that's a smarty own. That makes me think that Rhaenys is someone that has tried to stay, who's aware of that and has tried to stay away from the inevitability of humans knocking into each other like rocks in space. And eventually she had to lay she didn't have to do this, but she decided, that's the big key there. Like, she decided to go ahead and lay the smack down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's just been trying to stay out of it.
Now she's going
to
show her cards. It's so good. We have one episode left.
Good, yeah.
We have one episode left. One episode left.
So send us your owns this week on all the places that you can send us owns.
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Send us a DM on Twitter if the story... Instagram. If the story's down, send us a DM on Instagram.
We do DMs on Twitter. Send us a DM on Twitter.
Yeah, send us a DM on Twitter. We've got one episode left. So let's have fun this week. You know what I mean? Let's have a good time this week.
Yeah. Nonstop celebration the whole way through. And then a new episode. And then finale night. And then there's later this month, George R. R. Martin's going to be in New York City.
So will we?
Talking about Targaryens, Celebration of Dragons. I'm so glad that we're all still doing this and the hot D is actually good. High five. Cheers.
We'll see you guys later. Midweek.